We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful, sunny Southern California, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Ty, are you into time travel movies? Back to the Future, Looper,
some,
whatever.
Not Looper. No. Back to the Future, okay. Yes. Looper, not so much. Interstellar bookcase. Interstellar bookcase. Yes and no. I really span the full spectrum here when it comes to time travel.
All right. I'm getting more and more interested in it because we're in what, late June. We don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow. July, August, early September in the world, in football. I'm getting a little antsy. I wish we just had answers. I just wish everybody would be as safe as humanly possible and healthy as humanly possible. That would be amazing. I just want to know what's going to happen, Ty.
And yeah, that makes two of us.
I know. And I also mentioned this because I've already conducted the interview that you're about to hear. And by saying that, I mean people listening to the show and you yourself are going to hear it. And we talk about you.
Really?
And I think you're going to like it. So, and I say that to people listening and to you specifically, but I'm very excited for people to hear this show and the interview we did with Fox Sports' Adam Amin about what goes into broadcasting a college football game from a production standpoint and how might that change this fall with public health restrictions and adjustments to the broadcast. So I'm excited for you all to hear that, but that was in the past, though it's the future for you.
All right. Well, I am excited to hear that as well. You. Don't forget, if you are listening on a Friday morning or a Friday evening or Friday night over the weekend, yeah, hit us up, solidverbal.com. That's where you can find all of our old stuff. You can also email us there and sign up for our newsletter there. It's free to join. We won't spam you. If you do choose to just send us a message, we read every one that we get. We promise you. Can't respond to all of them, but we do read all of them. Also, go on out to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or whatever you're into. You can find the Solid Verbal. Subscribe to the show. You already know the drill at this point. If you're a listener of the last few weeks, we are doing two shows a week. At some point in the very near future, we're going to be switching that up to three shows a week. Once we start talking previews, once we start getting ready for the season, Again,
we're going to drag Bill Barnwell in here, maybe, to do a segment, a full episode, a series of episodes.
Yeah,
about,
we got,
I don't know,
we
something
got
human.
Time to kill here. We are going to just happy talk ourselves into believing that there's going to be a season, that it's going to be somewhat normal. We'll find out in due time, but you can subscribe to the show. We're going to be recording more feverishly than usual here in this, I guess, young preseason now, if you want to call it that, as we finally flip the page onto the summer months. And finally, hit us up on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Are we working on the TikTok thing yet? Are we doing that?
I think we have to, Ty. We're a combined 71 years old, yeah. And the time is right. It's ripe for the taking.
I also just called it the TikTok thing, so maybe I alone am the... This is that years old, but nonetheless, I am excited about this show. We want to talk about what college football looks like, if there is a season, how it looks on your picture tube in your living room. But before we even get there, Dan.
More time travel movies?
Let's get to breaking news.
Beep, 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 beep.
Not so breaking, I guess, but...
No.
Some notable things to discuss. As you know, we've been talking about news items at the top of each show to keep people up to date with what's going on in the world. I start with Penn State coach James Franklin. James Franklin told HBO's Real Sports that his family is going to stay in Florida while he coaches this season because of the coronavirus pandemic. So James Franklin has a 12-year-old daughter. She has sickle cell disease. Obviously, that puts her a little bit more at risk for complications should she contract the virus. He said it was a tough decision, but they made the decision to separate as a family because it's, quote, the right thing to do for my daughter. I suspect that Coach Franklin won't be the only one in this situation.
No.
Come fall.
No, it's the human element of what's happening. And I think we are very, very quick. And I'm saying me and you specifically, where we can't wait to see what Mel Tucker and Michigan State look like. We can't wait to see what Mike Norvell and Florida State look like. We're thinking about football things because we are trying to stay optimistic and this is a football show. But the actual human element of players who probably won't be spending time with families and loved ones and grandparents because they are, you know, at risk, and a story like James Franklin and James Franklin's family, I think it sort of colors that in an important way, where James Franklin's life is crazy altered to coach a football team. And it's admirable that, I suppose, he is, you know, willing to separate himself from his family for the good of his team on a certain level. But man, that's rough.
Tough.
That
tough
is
stuff.
Rough.
Tough stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we wish Coach Franklin, we wish all coaches,
yeah,
but Coach Franklin's family the best as well. Moving on, we've got news out of Oklahoma State. You might remember a bit of a situation we discussed with Mike Gundy wearing the OAN shirt.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State Athletics has announced that a new diversity council has been formed amid the fallout from that episode. Jason Kirksey, he is the university's chief diversity officer. He's going to chair that program. The council is going to include students, athletes, and alumni, and it's going to be housed in the university's division of institutional diversity. So it is nice to see Oklahoma State following up on this by showing some real action.
Did you read the Pete Thamel piece, I believe in Yahoo, about Chuba Hubbard and the Oklahoma State program and the sort of fact that the t-shirt incident was not a huge deal in a vacuum? It was sort of a culmination. It was, you know, the iceberg was a lot bigger beneath the surface. And fascinating, illuminating. And certainly Mike Gundy doesn't have the best reputation, sort of off the record whispers between people in the know and media members. And it was illuminating and enlightening to see the seemingly valid complaints and stories that players had about doesn't even know some of their names. He's so separated from the program that, you know, they're sacrificing and he can't even be held accountable enough to sort of be interpersonal on an extremely basic level with them. It's fascinating. And I'm not holding my breath that he is going to all of a sudden wake up and be this amazing alleged human. But it sounds like the Cowboys are taking things in the right direction, which happy to see.
All right. In other news, we mentioned the Vic Koenig thing on the last episode.
Yes.
He has since apologized. He issued a, quote, sincere apology to both KJ and the entire West Virginia family. That's in a statement posted to Twitter on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. KJ, in this sense, is Kerry Martin Jr. He's the one who made the allegations of mistreatment in the first place. Per my understanding, the investigation is still ongoing, so we'll probably have more news at some point in the future. But since we did report on it last episode, it's only fair to announce that Mr. Koenig has since apologized, and we'll see where that story goes.
Hope it works out for all. Again, never want to hold my breath, but if the end result is people in power held accountable, I don't know how you can't see that as a win.
All right, so here's an interesting story, and maybe this will get to the topic of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Nelson on Twitter tweets out, heard from a lot of coaches about this one over the last 12 hours. The Maricopa County Community Colleges in Arizona have canceled all sports for the 2020-2021 school year. There were 10 colleges reportedly affected. Not going to read through all of them. This is significant because it is a college canceling athletics, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And I think secondly,
it's a county.
It's a county.
Yeah.
Thirdly, it does beg the question, what is major college athletics going to do?
Right.
We do see that there are cases of COVID-19 spiking in all sorts of places around the country. You know, I think we are potentially headed towards a situation where there are some places that are drastically more affected than others. It may cause some athletic departments to consider what they want to do in the short and long term. And so a case like this, even though it's probably a small set of colleges that not a lot of our listeners have heard of, it is significant in the sense that it's happening at least somewhat already on the college level. We talked about some of the NAIA schools a couple episodes ago. So now we've got a little bit more smoke on this fire.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, remember, it's late June. This isn't something that's, you know, happening right before the season starts that teams were hopeful that, you know, things would turn around. This is late June and people are seeing something that is unsustainable for them or not able to be broached for 9 months, athletics. So when you said that term, major college football, I think we're going to find out what that means, what schools are going to be able to financially be able to make adjustments, whether it's, you know, with testing and travel and taking extra safety precautions, which cost money. I think it's going to be very interesting to see who does and doesn't sort of define themselves as having the resources and is willing to spend the resources to be a major college football team in the fall of 2020. I think that's going to become a lot clearer in the coming days, weeks, and months.
Well, the interesting tidbit I think that this pushes up against, Dan, is we've done the show for years, but we've known, any college football fan does, about the haves and the have-nots in college football.
Of course.
And I think college football, for its part, does the best it can to not bring that too much to the surface. You know, of course, oh, Toledo has a chance of winning the national championship. No, they don't. Right. No, they don't. They can play against some teams that are national championship quality, but when push comes to shove, no one's going to give Toledo a shot to get into that playoff. And I think it takes, unfortunately, dire circumstances like this to show the true difference between the haves and the have-nots when it comes to the pocketbook.
Yeah, you're right. And even if it's, I mean, every school is going to have a number of positive tests. It's some of the schools are going to say, we don't want to deal with liability that may come with that.
Right.
We don't want to deal with lawsuits. We don't want to deal with accusations that they can't defend themselves against because everything is so murky right now. That to me is going to be fascinating, is what schools are willing to take a potential long-term hit in order to sort of cover themselves.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. But who knows if this is a harbinger of what's to come or not, but I thought notable, given where we're at in the world. And finally, happy to John Swofford. He is the ACC commissioner. Yeah. He's going to retire after the 2020-21 season. That was announced yesterday on Thursday. He's 71. He's served for 24 years as the commissioner of the ACC. It's the longest tenure for a commissioner in league history. And so we wish him fond adieu.
Listen, if you can navigate realignment with your conference still existing and growing, that's some sort of success story.
Not bad.
I don't know what the ACC fully is holistically across all sports. It seems like it's mostly a basketball conference with Clemson football, but I hope that's not the case moving forward. They have a network affiliated, aligned, owned by ESPN, and that was partially due to John Wildhack coming over to Syracuse with his experience, a former, I think, president at ESPN. So they're able to grow into the modern times from a broadcast standpoint. But yeah, the ACC should be relatively fine, whoever's running it, but he certainly has been a huge name behind the scenes, in front of cameras, whatever. And I don't have a strong opinion about John Swofford.
Happy retirement, John Swofford.
Happy retirement. Hope everything is okay.
So today's show, as we said at the top, features our good friend Adam Amin, new broadcaster for Fox Sports. And we've had this question lingering in the backs of our minds for a while now. What happens if there isn't a season?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And if there is a season, how do you broadcast that? How do you handle these weird times that we're in? So we turn to Adam. Adam, of course, is a notable broadcaster, longtime friend of the show, new broadcaster for Fox Sports. Congratulations on that, our friend.
Have you watched any of the soccer or Korean baseball or any of the sports that are playing in empty stadiums? Do you have like an immediate reaction and feeling about what you're watching?
It has not bothered me that there's no crowd there. There's no crowd sound. I know NBC Sports.
Ambient sounds?
Yeah, NBC Sports is trying the thing on some games where they pump in crowd music as part of the broadcast, and you can go on the app to watch the game without. But, you know, I'm sure it will have an effect for those who are actually on the field. But for me as the home viewer, probably ways they can frame the game or you don't even notice that a crowd's a thing. I think a lot of us are used to going to high school football games that aren't necessarily the most attended. playing Pop Warner or going to a Pop Warner game where it's just a line of family and friends. So
sure.
I don't think the crowd thing is going to bother me as a spectator. I'm used to being at home anyway.
I think it's going to bother me. And we get into this and we talk about it. Yeah, because college football, and it's not just the crowd, it's everything that surrounds the sport. It's campus, it's tailgating, it's mascot, it's cheerleaders, it's band, it's chants in the crowd, it's traditions like, you know, the jump around tradition at Wisconsin, stuff like that, that I think is the reason we do this show. I mean, we focus a lot of our time on the football itself, an overwhelming amount of time on the football itself, and we still will gleefully, mind you. But I think there is going to be the charm that makes college football a cultural thing and not just a sport. I think that charm is going to be gone, and it's understandable. I think it's going to be very strange.
All right. Well, let's get into it again. He is our good friend, Mr. Adam Amin.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And with that, I always kind of say, like, it's my pleasure to bring in. I'm very excited to bring in. But it's just, it's somebody already in our inner sanctum. So saying, I'm excited to welcome in Adam Amin, newly of Fox Sports, is almost verboten. So Adam, Chicago, Illinois, Fox Sports, the voice of the Chicago Bulls. How you doing?
Everything's good. I fear that all of this is still just some weird dream that we've all been stuck into. So I don't know how to feel about it right now. But no, I'm very happy about all this stuff and hoping that we have a season to talk about come September, August and September.
As do I, as do we, as does everybody listening, I'm sure. And the reason that I thought of you specifically is because every time we hang out, the conversation invariably turns to not necessarily the business of broadcasting, though sometimes it does, but you are a to-the-bone sports broadcasting dork.
Yes.
And by that, I mean you celebrate all things the art of broadcasting and play-by-play. You celebrate all things the production elements that go into making these games that we love, be it camera work or graphics or sound or meeting with coaches or the trucks. There are so many moving pieces that a lot of people don't see that right. I've been fortunate enough to be in a truck and be on the field and sort of talk to producers and broadcasters and get a sense for that. I did a piece a little while ago on an NFL broadcast on a big crew, the A crew at Fox Sports. But it's one of the things you're passionate about. And I guess first and foremost, if you can give people a sort of big picture, almost like a Goodyear blimp view of what a typical big-time college football broadcast is made up of in terms of people and components.
Sure. I think, and obviously it varies, but if we're talking about, you know, the bigger end of the scale in terms of resources that are allotted, if you're walking in to a compound, you're probably going to see anywhere from 2 to 3 of those trailers. Especially for the high end shows, as you know, Dan, like one of those trailers is going to be the main production crew, the production truck, as it's often known as the truck. And in there are the producer, the director, the associate director, potentially some of the EVS operators. EVS is electronic video system. These are the replay people, the people that handle, manipulate, and adjust the replays that you see for big plays and small plays throughout a game. Yeah. Absolutely, it's simultaneously handling replays while also handling the live action that's taking place. The producer is the person in charge of the broadcast and is navigating the material that we're seeing on screen that is live, that is pertinent to the actual game action that's happening, and also manipulating with the help of other people that are assigned to do so, but also manipulating what you're seeing that is not in real time, whether it's the an element of like a season recap video, like a replay of a previous play, a highlight package coming out of halftime. Anything that's not game action that's happening live, the producer has to navigate between live action and anything that's not live. So that's just one truck. That's just one of these trailers. Right. So then the second unit, often called the B unit, is the graphics truck. So any of the graphics that you see that come up, anything that is manipulated on your television set, on your screen, that is computer generated, that is graphical, that is its own truck, that has its own trailer, just to have people that are communicating what could be a potential statistic that's on a graphic, what type of material is necessary for graphics, the promos that are necessary. So you have one truck, one trailer of just those people. That's probably 8 or 9 people in that unit. In the initial and core production truck, you may have anywhere from 15 to, depending on the level of game, I've done national championship games where there's 35 people in that longer, huge trailer. If it's an even bigger show, then you're going to have, you know, like if it's the World Series, you've got, you know, like a K-Zone truck, or if it's the Super Bowl, maybe the Skycam, the Spider Cam, has its own truck. So like, depending on the level of resource that the game gets, you're getting, you know, up to 100 people just walking into the television compound. You know, we haven't even mentioned that there may be a special section for audio people, the audio engineer of the broadcast, the A1, as they're known. We haven't even walked into the stadium yet, where we're talking about utility people, camera people, the people who are in charge of the satellite truck. The satellite truck is what takes everything from the broadcast being produced on site and then beams that back to Connecticut, New York, Florida, Charlotte, wherever the broadcast network is originated from, Atlanta, whatever it may be. So Los Angeles. So we're getting into now 150 people for maybe like your number 4 or 5 college football game on ESPN, maybe your number 2 or 3 college football game for Fox. And we're not even talking about the A-level show. We're not talking Fowler and Herbstreit or Gus and Joel. We're talking about or even Brad and Gary, for that matter. We're just talking about, you know, the number 3 game on that network that weekend. So we're talking about numbers into the hundreds, into the low hundreds, on a second tier game, so to speak, maybe.
A like Virginia Tech Miami 3:30 p.m. Eastern type game.
Yeah,
ESPN,
or even, you know, you can go as far as to say, hey, number 1 LSU's hosting Ole Miss in primetime.
Sure.
You know, that may be 3 trailers for that show. So we're still not talking about the A show on ESPN or the A show on Fox.
So how many of those people, so the people that are in trucks, the people that are producing the show, and the people that are in the satellite uplink, anybody that is at all involved in the core production, not even broadcast, not even camera, just right, the people that are feeding and constructing everything on the fly, what percentage of those people are local, and what percentage of those people fly, you know, a day or 2 days before to that site?
Many are local, in particular utility folks that are that's a lot of, like, if you see somebody handling a lot of cable, that's a utility person that is essential to what we do. They're making sure the connectivity of this show. If you've walked into those engineering rooms with the wires connected to the servers, like, that's what it looks like plugging into a production truck. And these utility people are so sharp, and they know these systems inside and out. They're usually local. I would say there are core groups, part of the production groups, that are regional. So you might get, you know, folks that'll work the SEC network. They'll work the SEC CBS package. They'll do, you know, Big Ten for Fox and Big Ten basketball for ESPN. Like, they'll kind of stay regionalized. And then you have the people that are flying in who are the main production people, of the truck, producer, director, graphics people more often than not. These are people that are traveling with the announcing crew every single week. And that is the section of the crew. Again, we're talking about core people, the people that are in charge of all these different elements that are now working out of studios that usually would be getting on a plane every single week to travel to a football game. They may be working, or maybe have been adjusting to working out of a studio now that's based in Connecticut, North Carolina, Florida, Atlanta, Los Angeles, whatever.
How many of these crew members, these core crew members, be it producer, director, graphics people, that are making these on-the-fly decisions, how many of them are employees of the networks, and how many of them, and I didn't know this until pretty recently, mm-hmm. are union members that are specifically, they work for unions that, you know, are camera ops or editors or graphics unions, whatever. So when there are decisions that come down from networks regarding whatever this fall looks like, how many of them are actual employees of ESPN, Fox, CBS, NBC, whatever?
I would say a good chunk, but okay. there are a few people. I think it's gotten less and less over time, where networks have opted to hire more full-time people to have, you know, especially with, you know, what I saw at ESPN with the growth of the ACC and SEC networks. That's a lot of inventory that suddenly you're handling. Like, it's not just football and basketball. We're talking about softball, baseball, lacrosse, volleyball, gymnastics, all of it. So I think getting more people into full-time roles has been a goal, and then assigning those people who work full-time into these multiple sports. They're working, 10 months out of the year producing content, producing games. There is a small group still remaining that works at somewhat of a freelance level. But if you're Bill Bunnell and you're producing the College Football National Championship, if you're Phil Dean and you're the Monday Night Football guy, you've been an employee of ESPN or Disney or whatever, or in the past ABC for a long period of time. So usually if you're working one of the big ones, been one of the big events, you have a title of some sort at ESPN as a senior producer or as a coordinating producer, something like that. And I imagine I don't know all the intricacies and nuances of Fox yet. I'm learning. I can't speak for CBS directly, having never worked for them, but I think this is fairly common across the board for most of these broadcast networks.
How many people are typically, and again, we'll stick with your, the three crew, the number three crew, sure, or the C crew for college. How many people are typically inside a stadium at any given time helping production? So I'm sure I'm going to miss people, but sure, Camera operators and audio people and people shooting on the fly and running back and forth between truck and field, any sort of assistance helping out any of these, mm-hmm, people. How many people are of these crew members are traveling to sites, and how many of them are local, and how many of them are just in a stadium, at in Lane, yeah, Stadium in Death Valley at any given time?
Yeah, I think, here, let's walk through it, right? I mean,
sure.
I think people will appreciate some of the inside baseball of this, and you know this fairly well, Dan. So we've gotten past the compound. We're already, in the low 100s maybe in terms of number of personnel. And I don't think I actually answered it before. If I gave you a percentage on who's traveling, I would probably tell you it's about 30-40%, depending on the show.
Okay.
Are traveling in. And I would tell you that probably, anywhere from 40 to maybe the remaining 60% might be regionalized or local. So I'm lumping in more people than I think you were asking. I divided it into two groups, but I think the core production, it's probably about 30%, 40% of those people.
And when are they getting into town related to kickoff?
Usually a couple days before. Same, usually if it's a Saturday noon game, we're probably getting in sometime Thursday during the day. If it's a Saturday night game or a bigger game, maybe you'll come in for practice. So usually Thursday for a Saturday game, and the hours vary. So we're in the low 100s just talking about that number. Now let's walk into the stadium. We're dealing with, on a big show, even on a second, quote unquote, second tier show, you're still looking at nine or 10 cameras. So that's nine camera people. That's nine utility people that may need to help out. Let's say four of these are set cameras, four or five of them. Then you have four roaming cameras that you're going to need one to two assistants for. So, if you're looking at two for each, three people per, there's 12, another four or five cameras, you're getting close to about 20 people just for camera alone. Audio, you probably need about five to 10 people, depending on the number of microphones you have. Those people that stand with the parabolic microphone, that big, sure, kind of plastic looking shield with the thing sticking out, that's a parabolic microphone. You have to have somebody holding that and somebody carrying the utility for that, the cable for that. So if there's five of those or four of those on the field, there's another 8 to 10 people that we're talking about. So you're getting into, between audio and video, audio and camera, anywhere from 20 to 35 people probably, and this counts people in the booth as well. And then let's add in the announcers for another five, including support personnel. So me, analyst, reporter, there's three, stats, spotter, and, on-field producer, booth coordinator, somebody who might be stage managing, something like that. There's probably a runner or an assistant. So we're getting into an additional 20 or so people. So we're getting into the 200 range of personnel that are on site for a typical decent tiered college football game. And obviously those numbers vary with the show. Different sports are going to have lower numbers. Indoor sports usually have lower numbers.
Yep.
If it's like a basketball game, just because you're contained a little bit more. But we're talking about 200 people, 250 people for this level of game. So it is a lot of people that suddenly are in close quarters with one another. It's groups of people that are in very close quarters with one another.
Yep.
And And I know that's kind of what you're getting at with asking about this, just the level of concern you might have. And I've, again, as we, and I know we'll discuss this as well, I've been on shows that don't have everybody on site. In fact, two of the last 4 years of working college football, I've been on a show that is announcers on site, audio and camera on site, utilities and satellite on site, but the core production crew, audio, you know, the main audio, the producer, director, graphics people, they're back in Charlotte or Connecticut or Florida or LA, right, or whatever it may be.
And so you mentioned that it's a couple days before that you'll generally get into town, and close quarter wise, since this is relevant now, what is happening beforehand? Where are meetings? How many people are in these meetings? Obviously, people, I think, have a concept for announcers meeting with coaches and sort of significant players ahead of time to sort of get a sense for where they are mentally and to be able to talk about, hey, I talked to the offensive coordinator and he mentioned that they've had success doing X, Y, and Z, whatever. So you have these meetings. How many people, you know, how often are people sort of coming into contact planning in the, say, 36 hours before kickoff?
Sure. Like I said, there's all these groups, right? So here's the camera guys all setting up here, and they're going to talk to the director. They're going to go in the booth. They're going to be around the audio guys. Then they're going to go back to the truck to talk to the director. Then they're going to hang out with the utility guys for lunch. So there's just production people, right? There's close quarter contact. Now the announcer and production personnel that's in the meeting. So it's usually the announce team, 3 to 4 people there, 2 to 4 people there. Producer, director, and yeah, I mean, usually that you want to limit it, obviously, for comfort sake for the coaches. Like, you want coaches, you know, you don't want them to feel like, you know, they're telling 20 different people and stuff that they're talking about might get out. So we try to minimize the amount of people already.
Yep.
So let's say there's 5, you know, the 3 announcers, you know, 2 announcers, a reporter, the producer, director. There'll be an SID, sports information director from the school. That's the media relations or PR person that handles that particular sport. Maybe 1 or 2 people from the media relations staff, the SID staff, and maybe one other person, one other staff member. So this number is going to range anywhere from 7 to, or let's say 6 to 12 people for an hour and a half. And then now let's bring in the other coordinator. Now let's bring in the other coach. Now let's bring in the quarterback who's coming back from class after talking with his 30 classmates. Let's now talk to the middle linebacker who was in a study hall. And he was around, you know, 10 or 15 of his classmates in the library. So, you know, like we're getting it. You're starting to see the depth and the scope of the number of people that are involved, not only in our broadcast, but now who else is coming into contact. Like this on a typical week, we're in close contact with some group of people, not just some person, some group of people on a Friday before the Saturday game for probably a good 10 to 15 hours, I would say.
Okay. And so you mentioned that in some of your experiences that producers and graphics people and, you know, people, crew involved in the broadcast have been remote, be it, you know, in Florida, Charlotte, Connecticut, yeah, whatever. What does that dent look like in terms of sheer number of people? You sort of talked about, you know, getting upwards of 200 people total when you calculate everything local and people who come in for the game. When you have that more express version, which I assume is for financial purposes, what does that do to your numbers?
Right. It significantly does minimize it. It is probably just getting into utilities. And typically these are smaller shows, quote unquote, in terms of resources. We're not typically doing, you know, if you have this designation, you're probably not on one of the main networks every week, or if you are, you know, it's just not that as many resources. So you're already kind of cutting down on the number, but let's say you're doing a 7 camera game. So you need all the camera people and their utilities. You're going to need, you know, on-site audio people, but not the people that are in the truck, not the A1 and the audio engineers themselves. So you can probably cut a crew somewhere between like anywhere from like a half, like into half or like 40% of, And sometimes, depending on the level of show, maybe, and especially if you're doing something like basketball, where it's a smaller group, you might get rid of like 60% of the crew that needs to be on site. So there, yeah, the advantages in the past have been, I mean, let's not lie about it, it's been strictly fiduciary, like they've been financial. Like you said, you're trying to cut costs for games right. that aren't getting as much attention. That's, listen, it's part of the business. It's the cost of doing it these days. It's unfortunate in a lot of senses, and I'll play, you know, the whiny announcer here.
Sure.
I think, you know, it's tougher for us. There are technical problems in terms of delay, in terms of when we're seeing something on a monitor during a replay compared to calling the game in front of us so that it matches up live right. with what you're seeing at home. There's a lot of like technical mumbo jumbo that you don't need to be as a fan, should not concern you. It is not your job to be concerned about it. Maybe you'll notice it now that I've told you about it, but for the most part, people watching don't really care. They're not really noticing it. So I get that there's a lot of technical issues with it that really hamper the full ability to do our job, but I get the reasoning why. I'm an understanding person in that sense, but it's not ideal for most of us. But in the sense of what you're talking about right now, when we have far more important circumstances and certainly higher stakes,
sure,
than just the camera delay, like we're talking about people's health and all that now, which is clearly much more important, you can get rid of a significant number of people on site that are going to be associating with one another. The thing is, it's still a pretty large group that is going to be associating with one another regardless.
I visited one of the conference networks. I guess I won't say which. It doesn't really matter. But I visited one of the conference networks once to meet with a bunch of people there that I've known for a long time. And they showed me the control room and that a lot of their college basketball production and switching, so cutting between camera angles and cutting to graphics, are actually done in that production facility, the home of the conference network.
Yep.
And it got me to thinking, how much could you do in the way with football, with, I suppose, more moving pieces than basketball? Could we be talking about a situation, either Fox, ESPN, somebody that's broadcasting a number of games on a given Saturday, potentially? How many games, I guess, at the same time could they be producing? Are these places mm-hmm. outfitted to have, you know, a Fox Sports game, a Fox game, and a Fox Sports 2 game or whatever
yeah.
going on at the same time, same with the ESPN family of networks? Is that logistically possible? Are there the control rooms to do it?
So I'm speaking out of turn here strictly because
this is my
own experience. This is my yes. own experience. So improvements may have been made since, and I know that's certainly something that the folks at ESPN and Disney do want to
yep.
think about. They want to improve these control rooms. So let's discuss that first. These control rooms are really nice. Like, you go to Texas A&M, where they've been doing stuff like this far before the SEC network, like they're advanced. Like, they have one of the best facilities in the country.
The stadiums and the facilities are outfitted for remote yes. production like this. Okay.
They are outfitted for that. And that's what was done at a lot of these SEC and ACC schools. It was done with this in mind, to produce games for the network from campus, and to not, obviously that saves you cost in the long run, but it's also a really good opportunity for people who are 19, 20, 21, 22 years old to obviously broadcast, be on air, or like get on a production track and learn how to produce games and learn what like each part of the truck or in this case control room does for a live broadcast. Work a camera, work a, you know, like there's a lot of great opportunity here. Now, when this was initially done, it was never done with football in mind, because okay. football, as you said, a lot more moving pieces, but the grandeur of the sport itself, the meaning and weight on each game every single week. And listen, obviously there are some clunkers every single week regardless, like you're just going to have them based on record and chance. But like, I think the level of pageantry that goes with football is on a much bigger scale than I think a control room is truly capable of handling, at least the ones that I saw on site and the ones that you've seen probably at various schools. Like Notre Dame is a little bit better. They have some connectivity to their football stadium because it's so close. Like, right. I'm sure there are schools that have some level of connectivity. And again, we're getting into some real inside baseball, but like, the cable systems, the fiber systems that transfer information from one place to another at a very quick rate, that's why you can do control room broadcasts of basketball, softball, soccer, where you may not have volleyball, especially the indoor stuff, maybe not even soccer, but the indoor stuff is a lot easier to handle. It's just smaller. It's easier to have that level of capability. You can do it for bigger sports. Notre Dame's done it for lacrosse, field hockey, things like that. But there's just still something about the grandeur of football and the expectation that you as a fan have when you're watching football on a Saturday. You expect a certain level of production, and I don't think those control rooms are made for that. The other part of this is the networks themselves that have control rooms. Now, Fox has done an excellent job, I think, of handling NASCAR. CBS and Turner have done it with some golf, where they've been able to handle this. I think you can do this at these networks. Like ESPN has handled it with college football pretty well, I would say. I don't know if I asked a casual fan watching at home if they knew our Thursday night broadcast had any type of technical delay or malfunction.
Right.
We had our own issues, but the hope is that you don't recognize that. Now that I've told you, you may actually notice it if you go back on YouTube and watch Baylor, West Virginia, or North Carolina, Wake Forest. But the networks themselves have capabilities. I think ESPN has two or three in Bristol. I think they have two or three in Charlotte. They have two or three in Florida. That's why the Wide World of Sports compound is the attractive destination for the NBA.
Right.
Because their infrastructure is in place to handle that at a high level. So that's what we're talking about. I know that was a lot of information, Dan, but I think that's what you're looking
it's
for. That's kind of where all these networks are at in terms of capability. You can handle two or three games a day, but you may not be able to do two or three games at a time from the same campus. You can do two, you know, you can do one at a time from Connecticut, one at a time from Orlando. Maybe two out of Charlotte at the same time. So like that's what we're talking about in terms of capability.
The odds are if you're listening to this and you're a fan of sports that you've watched a game, maybe even probably recently, in which the broadcasters are not on site. The broadcasters are in Connecticut or LA or Charlotte or whatever, while the game might be in Seoul, South Korea, or
right.
just thousands of miles away from where the yeah. broadcasters are. My assumption is you've called a game remotely just because most broadcasters at some point seem to have
right.
had that experience. Have you? And if so, what's it like to call a game in a quiet booth very far away from the actual field?
Yeah, we had a stretch of time where, you know, let me give you a little bit of jargon here.
Sure.
So we have what we call REMI Productions, R-E-M-I, that essentially means remote integration, R-E-M, remote I integration. So what that means is integrating a studio setup with a remote setup to broadcast the same thing. Like usually how this works is the people on site, the whole production team creates the broadcast, and then the satellite truck beams it back all in one piece to the campus site, let's use Bristol for the example here. In these REMI productions, that production is done completely completely from the campus, out of the studio. What is called REMI Pro is what I've done mostly. Is I'm on site, announcers are on site. It's what we just discussed, Dan.
Yeah.
The core production crew is back in a studio. So now instead of producing out of the same site, you are producing the same item, the same game, the same event from two different sites, and you're trying to integrate those. And that's where all the technical issues come into play, delays and things like that. So I just told you about REMI Pro with what we were doing, announcers on site, production back at campus. REMI is when all of us are on campus and I'm in a control room with four monitors, maybe five monitors in front of me. Typically, when you're doing these shows, it's a smaller show, so you're only looking at a basketball game, a baseball game, softball, soccer, volleyball, something a little bit more contained. I've never done a football game like this. And I think the only football game I can recall was that game in Australia. I want to say it was like Stanford and Hawaii, maybe. I can't remember the two teams.
Cal,
maybe it was
Cal, Hawaii.
Cal and Hawaii.
Yeah.
I think we remember that. I think that was done with the everybody's in Connecticut and they're just getting a feedback.
Right.
That's what a Remy show is when it's all done. That's what Olympic broadcasts have done for years. Mm-hmm. Olympic field hockey has been done like that forever.
Smaller tennis tournaments, I know.
Tennis tournaments.
Steve Weissman, I've seen pictures. Yeah.
Yep. Steve's done that out of the Tennis Channel studio in California when something is happening in Paris. Like, you can do that. That's been going on for a long time. So shouldn't be anything of shock value to any fan. It's been done for a long period. It is fairly easy to do for something self-contained like basketball. Typically, you're only getting a four-camera setup for most basketball games. You know, there's so many games happening on any given night. So you're producing a lot of games. I think having, four cameras, so each monitor in your little control room has one of the camera views on it that are moving at various times. And then you have what's called a program feed. And program is the same thing that you are getting at home. Everything I'm seeing is what you're seeing at home. That's where the cuts happen, you know, from camera to camera. That's where the graphics pop up. That's the feed that you and I are both going to see if we were to watch it on our couches. So we're trying to take things that we would typically be looking at physically while we're on site. Like, I'm going to look at the bench to see what the coach's reaction is to his star player committing his second foul in the first half. I would typically just look at the coach. Here, I'm at the mercy of the cameras. So if the camera's looking at a coach, great. I can comment on that reaction and be able to say, man, Bob Huggins is apoplectic after that last foul call. If I'm not looking, if the camera isn't looking at that, then I can't be looking at that. So I'm at the mercy of the camera crew. And what's hard about that in football is usually these shows have more cameras. There's a lot more going on. There's a lot more to look at. You're looking at personnel shifts constantly after every play so you know if it's four receivers or three, if they're bringing in the third tight end. Like, you're paying attention to these things in the booth, and I can see that from the bird's eye view. Here comes the tight end package. Here comes the fullback, whatever. It's hard to do that in football when there are so many more elements that you need to pay attention to. It's a lot easier for something like basketball, baseball, soccer. Like, it's just easier to do it when it's a little bit more self-contained.
Right. You're always going to have a camera trying to find the quarterback who just threw a back-breaking interception on the sideline. So you can react to him like, oh, gosh, it's brutal to see this guy as he's, you know, sulking at the end of the bench on the phone with the coordinator. It feels like the difference might be between a full production with all of the elements and all of the cameras and all of the visuals and what an express production might look like.
Yeah, I think the other part of it, too, is you can't really... One thing that I think separates really great announcers is the level of anticipation that you can recall from. Like, when you can anticipate something big happening in the game, or even something small, a substitution, whatever, you can be out in front of it and be able to relay that to your audience. Part of anticipation, like on a big throw, a long throw, deep throw down the sideline, right? If A.J. McCarron's throwing to Amari Cooper, and I see the separation that Cooper already has, the cameras may not see that, so you may not see it at home. You're looking at the offensive line and A.J. McCarron scanning the field, but I, from the booth, can see Amari Cooper start to separate, and I can add that into the call when McCarron lets go of the ball. Go, you know, McCarron downfield, he's got Cooper. Cooper's got steps, and now the camera is catching up as the ball is thrown, and you're already excited because my voice is going up. That means you're feeling like, oh, something important may happen, and then you're looking for Amari Cooper. He gets a separation. There's a 75-yard touchdown, and you and I, as a broadcaster and fan, have connected on that. You lose some of that when you're doing these games from a control room. You lose a lot of that when you can't feel. You may get the fan noise on a typical broadcast when fans are in the studio, in the stands.
Right.
You may get that noise piped in, but you don't feel it. So let's say we're doing games without fans, we're going to lose that. We're not going to have that feel from the crowd, which makes our job that much more important to you at home. But we're still, if we're limited by not being on site, or if you have to work with, you know, being in a control room and just looking at the cameras in front of you, the monitors in front of you, you're not going to have that same bird's eye view, that omniscient point of view that allows for that level of anticipation. So that's a really deep dive into what broadcasters in particular and broadcast crews in general are battling to try to give you as a fan the same experience that you're used to.
From what you've seen so far with sports leagues who have begun playing once again, be it tennis, be it golf, be it Bundesliga or Premier League overseas, the Korean baseball, what do you anticipate an express football broadcast looking like that, you know, has less in stadium, has fewer people in stadium, crew-wise, has fewer, you know, toys to play with, camera, audio, graphics-wise. If you had, I mean, I assume part of this is speculation because I assume ESPN, Fox, CBS, whoever, they have not fully made their decisions about who's essential, what's essential. But if you had to speculate on how any of these networks in presumably empty or emptier stadiums, what those college football broadcasts might look like, where's the fat to cut and what is essential?
Yeah, I think certain camera, again, as you said, I'll reiterate just for posterity's sake. I'm speculating off this just based on my past experiences and just trying to read the room a little bit. But if I'm having to make that decision, it's not an easy decision to make, what to cut, what not to cut. I imagine you still need, I think, 4 or 5 cameras minimum to be able to properly give you the same X and O football that you want, you know, the replays that you need and want. You know, you could probably have a cart camera. The cart camera is important because oftentimes those are the cameras that are lined up on the goal line or on the first down marker.
Right.
You know, and obviously the bigger the show, the more opportunities and entry points you may have into that and the more angles you can cover. But for the most part, even on the smallest football shows, you're trying to have a cart cam or a line cam. You're trying to have what's called a slash, which is an angled camera, so you can see a lot. You know, you can get a lot of the picture. I know a lot of you have probably heard of All 22. You know, the one of the first extra resources we look for when the show or game is bigger is the All 22 cam.
Yep.
Which we like to use. That's a different one. So
not SkyCam. When I say SkyCam, I mean it's shot from the top of the stadium, a stationary camera.
A stationary All 22 cam with you know, you see all 22 players. Mm-hmm. And then, the SkyCam as well. Like, will we use a SkyCam anymore? Because, you know, part of the reason we use it is because it has great access to shots of fans. But I think the main purpose for it is, you kind of see what the quarterback sees. You get it's cool views, like it's views you can't get. That's why it's on the big shows, the big college shows and the big NFL shows. It just looks awesome. So will we even bother with that anymore if fans aren't in the stands? We won't need the fans in the crowd or the camera people in the crowd anymore that are kind of roaming because there's no fans to look at. So you may only need one or two of your camera guys after a goal is scored. In a soccer match, all right, you know, what often the communication is like is, let's say a touchdown scored and you have 5 cameras to work with, one of them being the game camera that's following the main action. So that's one knocked out. The other 4, you might tell them, if you're the director, hey, let's get Steve Spurrier after a touchdown. Let's get Paul Johnson after a touchdown. Give me the quarterback who threw the pass and the receiver who caught it. If you have a 5th camera that can go, all right, give me fans in the student section. If you get another camera, give me the fans in the road team's student section that are celebrating the road team touchdown. Like, these are the priority checklists that you do, and you're lopping a lot of these off now, trying to figure out what angles do I get after the touchdown, before, Where am I parking these cameras? What can I use as a replay? What's essential? So that's kind of the thought process of that. You're going to lose a lot of audio in general, I would imagine. Or let's say you get a bigger show that says we want to have players mic'd up. Well, now you need people. You know, you need audio people to serve that purpose and to serve that role. So, you know, we may hear the interactions on the bigger shows. Maybe you won't hear them on a third level, you know, a C level or D level game. So I can't tell you exactly what the priority list is right now, but I think that's some of the thought process as to where you're trying to what you're looking at in terms of keeping and cutting.
We briefly mentioned the Skycam Wirecam. As people know, the camera that is flying, literally flying on a wire over the field, capturing plays, you know, sideline fans, whatever, as you mentioned. That's remote controlled by, I believe, two people and a producer in a booth. You know, it's the XY and then Z axis, I believe, is what people are controlling. Cameras can be automated in that way. Cameras throughout the stadium that are, you know, on whether they're tripods or stands or whatever, can those be automated from a technological standpoint? Can somebody remote control those? Can they be automated from a union standpoint? Are they allowed to be automated given, you know, union contracts with these networks? What is the status of unmanned, unpersoned cameras?
I think, again, I'm speaking just from my own angle here, because I don't know everything about this, and I've talked to a lot of camera guys about it because I am fascinated by it. So I'm speaking as a somewhat educated fan of this angle of it. But I don't know if we're at unmanned cameras for wide game action.
Okay.
So for a football game, you'll typically have three cameras up top, you know, that give you all of the angles. Usually there's one at midfield. And then there's one somewhere on both sides between the 20 and the 30. So that's how you get the full field coverage, just depending on where the ball is, what yard line it's spotted at. So those cameras are really hard to leave unmanned. They're the bigger cameras that like you see, you know, you'll see the shots, you know, during Thanksgiving, like, hey, look at our great camera crew. And they're, I mean, it's both arms. You got to do a lot of work, you know, to rotate that. If you're a cameraman or camerawoman, you got a lot of work to do there. And you have a lot of ground to cover. Because if there is a 70-yard pass or a 40-yard pass in the air, you got to cover that. And that's a human element that is really hard to recreate.
Yeah, for sure.
With just a remote control. And then you're getting into the delay aspect of it, where somebody, regardless, is going to have to be on site. Because if you're trying to, let's say there is a person back in Connecticut that is manning the Skycam, but the picture
you need that, someone there setting it up.
You need someone setting it up.
Might as well have them using it, yeah.
You might as well have them use that. And then, by the way, there's also the 5 to 7 second delay that now I'm, like, you can't make up for that. So I think those specific cameras are really hard to not have a human on them. Like, it's just too many reactions. There's too many permutations that cannot be predicted, we don't have that technology yet, you know? And I think someday we might, but I also think that's a long ways away. That's a really long ways away. And you're going to have somebody on site anyway. So I feel like that's a moot point. I think there are some cameras, maybe an All-22 that can be unmanned, or used via remote control. I do think there's a capability of that, but the main cameras that we care about that are essential to the game, I don't think are at a point yet where they can be unmanned.
So if I am sort of reading between the lines that you're writing, I'm hearing there are going to be fewer camera angles, there are going to be fewer audio personnel, much of the production will be remote, as especially the networks build up their capabilities in the remote way. I think we'll probably not see sideline reporters with the proximity that they'll have to be at to players. And even post-game is, it's not going to look like what we're used to. We're going to have, I suppose, feeds of reporters asking questions to coaches and players in a school studio, a school, you know, you have a backdrop, whatever that we're used to. And that's going to have to be fed and controlled. And that's going to be an intricate dance.
I think, you know, the to go back a little bit, even into the prelude to the games themselves, like the conference call or the coaches meetings that we were talking about where all these people are in, like Zoom and Skype and FaceTime and all of it, like that's going to be used. And that may not go anywhere. That actually, and which, by the way, I had an interesting conversation with somebody about this. Do you need that to necessarily do the job? Do you need to be in person to really do the job? I think there's a level of comfort that comes with being face to face. I think there is a level of trust that comes when you're in the room. But there are also NFL and college coaches, and this depends on the coach themselves. Like they may not care. They say, oh, it's all good. I know you're just trying to do your job. We're on a Zoom call or a phone call or a conference call or whatever. I'll give you the info that you need. Some coaches are more tight-lipped on the phone than they are in person. They're, you know, there's the trust factor is there. Some coaches don't care at all, and they're not going to give you anything anyway. So, like, I think the mileage varies on that from depending on which angle you're coming from. But I do think that's going to be a main thing that's used. And then to go back to what you were talking about in the post game, I think that's going to continue to be used as well. I think that's going to be every beat writer may just get the Zoom link in their email 10 minutes after the close of the final horn. And it's like, hey, here's the Zoom link. Coach Mike Leach will join you, you know, 10 minutes after the final whistle sounds, and just be ready to go. Like, we may end up doing it that way. So the technology is there for a lot of these things, and that can be a good thing. Obviously, my honest concern for the future is that networks and companies are going to go, well, we saved a lot of money doing it this way. Should we just do it like this all the time? And I'm sure we're going to have to find a little bit of a balance there. I hope they would ask for our input, and I think I would be honest in my assessments. I think I've been honest so far in this to say, like, listen, I don't need to meet with every coach to do my job properly. I don't have to sit down with them. And if it's the right type of person who's cool, and in the NFL where you have broadcast crews that have been doing NFL games for 10 to 20 years with coaches that have been there or been in the league for 5 to 15 years, like, everybody knows each other in some of these circumstances, so you don't need to be in person. Everybody trusts one another. And my concern is that the financial benefits are going to completely overtake the benefits of doing it the old way. I understand the financial benefits of this, you know, the cost-cutting benefits of this, but I also think in some of these elements, it's way better, just quality-wise, to be there and to be in person and to be on the same page. And I got to tell you, I've done it with the producers and core crew back in Connecticut or whatever, and I've done it with everybody together. And man, everybody together is just so much better. It just is. The camaraderie that we have on these groups, on these crews, the friendships that I've made that will last forever because of the people I went through, you know, was crawling through the proverbial trenches through of these broadcasts. You know, this is I think you described it perfectly in that video you were referencing, that piece you put together. It's a symphony of chaos or something along those lines. And when you have any type of
people
chaos,
who've abandoned you in the booth.
Yes. Yeah. Mac, all the way from our booth coordinator to Mac Brown himself. So
correct.
When you go through those full seasons with people together, you really gain a camaraderie, and the quality of the product is higher, I truly believe, when you're all together. I'm hoping that we get back to some form or fashion of that as soon as possible. I understand if it's not going to be the case for 2020.
So one of the things you mentioned was you didn't know, you know, perhaps people didn't even realize that some of the production elements were out of Bristol this past season when you're doing Thursday nights. So let's say you are a smart fan. Let's say you are, you know, you're really attentive and you're perceptive and you sort of can spot things or pick up on things that seem a little bit off. A Ty Hilton Brandt type, you know, you're
very
watching your game. in you Eastern
can't, you
PA.
Can't get,
you,
you can't get anything past the man on his couch in Eastern Pennsylvania.
The man
with
doesn't
his loyal
sleep.
Samoyed next to him. He is, that's true. He is noticing all of this stuff.
That's true. I wish we could kid, but no, Ty is very perceptive about this stuff. So yes. You're a Ty Hildenbrandt type. You're on your couch. You're watching your 65-inch LED TV, a Minnesota Penn State game or whatever.
Sure.
What do you believe, with, again, informed speculation, what will be the most noticeable difference between a game you're used to in 2016, 17, 18, 19, and potentially what that experience where you'll say something in your head like, huh, that's definitely different. That's definitely a new way of doing things in these very strange times. What's going to be the most obvious visual difference?
I mean, obviously, if there aren't fans in the stands, that'll be the most jarring, certainly. So kind of disregarding that, more on the technical side, and you're sitting on your couch. I would say the kind of in-between plays shots.
Yeah. That it'd be more like
really,
baseball.
Yes, I think so. But even then, in a big baseball game, in a playoff game, like one of the reasons Joe Buck is so revered amongst the people in the industry is because he, especially on baseball, in his entire career, has been tremendous at letting the director be one of the stars of a broadcast. Because when you're 3-2, two outs, seventh inning, one run game, tying run at second, home team is pitching, and you got to that two strikes point, between every pitch up until the end of the inning, there is a shot of a fan with their hand buried in head buried in their hands. There is a fan going nuts. There are people that look shocked. I mean, Surrender Cobra is a director and camera person finding that guy.
It's true.
You know, like the LSU girl with the unimpressed look
spots
on her face.
Yeah.
That is Skycam and a really good director on that CBS show finding her. You don't get those moments without a great director and a great camera person and a great crowd. And those shots not only smooth out the edges of the broadcast, and when I say that, I mean coming back from the commercial or going to the commercial break or whatever it may be, not only do they smooth out those rougher edges with great shots, beautiful shots of fans or whatever, in game, you're building tension somehow. If it's third down and eight and LSU is playing in Death Valley against Ole Miss or Auburn, and it's third down and eight and those edge guys are going to pin their ears back and Dave Aranda's calling for a blitz, the crowd is going to let you know that that stuff's about to go down. And the announcers will play off of that. If I'm hearing that, I'll just say, third down and eight, LSU loves to blitz here. Let's see what they bring. And then it's 7 seconds of crowd shots and the noise. And then, Bo Nix going up to the line of scrimmage and trying to battle the crowd and point to the sideline and point to the receivers. Like, all of that is part of the buildup to some of the more fun moments of the night that you're mm-hmm. watching and listening to on your couch. Those go away. And that will probably be the most jarring thing that I think will be affected to like the most visceral thing that I think you'll feel. The lack of noise, the lack of fans, but the visual and psychological and oral effect that has on your enjoyment of the game as a fan watching the broadcast.
So it'll have the emotional energy of Big Sky baseball.
Like, I'm thinking back to my days of doing minor league baseball.
Yeah.
And listen, on a Friday or Saturday night when there's fireworks or it's
yeah,
it's
dancing
Thursday,
burrito.
Thursdays,
yeah.
You're going to get 2,000 to 6,000 people depending on the team.
Sure.
And the night. But if it's Monday night for a team that's two games under 500, you're not going to have more than maybe 500 to 1,000 people in the stands anyway. And they're probably not going to be overtly engaged. The organ will play. The PA guy will introduce every batter. The walk-up music will play.
Through the motions.
And as a broadcaster, you just kind of work off that. And then, you know, your bigger calls are not going to be as big. They have to be relative to the atmosphere And I remember that from 9 years ago doing minor league baseball. I remember that from doing games where there, frankly, just aren't that many people in the crowd. I've done plenty of games like that in my life. And I understand that I'm still going to be excited to do games. I'm still going to have fun. I'm still going to enjoy a 450-foot home run. I'm still going to enjoy a touchdown, you know, a 75-yard run for a score. But the noise that you hear coming out of my mouth, and I imagine my analyst and every broadcast crew you watch, is going to shift relative to the atmosphere.
Wow. Okay. I feel like everybody is smarter for this.
I hope
past
so.
50 some odd minutes, because this stuff is fascinating to me. It really is. And it's going to be so strange, because where college football really differentiates itself is the energy around
yes.
the game, be it tailgating,
yes.
be it bands, cheerleaders, you know, people out, you know, leaving the stadium in the middle of the game to go drink some more outside
yeah.
of the stadium, and the traditions and the mascots and the bells that are
yeah.
shaken by Mississippi State fans. And so it's going to, you know, we sort of joke about how different it's going to be, but it's mm-hmm. not going to be college football. It'll be football, but there is going to be the seasoning is going to be gone for sure.
It'll be college football in the sense of there are colleges playing football, and that's why it will be college football. But college football with a capital C and a capital F, the way you and I have fallen in love with it, or
right.
the way you and I have enjoyed it, is it's just going to be different. And what I would also say is, listen, I'm hoping that we get to the point where this is an interesting 1 year experiment.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And by the way, if you want this to be an experiment, wear your damn masks, please.
That'd be good.
Like please just do what smart people are trying to tell you to do for
mm-hmm.
the sake of having, if you don't care about the guy next to you, so be it. Care about the team that you root for, because I would like to be at these places
yeah.
to call games for you. You may not be in the stands regardless, but let some of us be there, including the players themselves, so that we can bring these games to you.
Yeah.
I implore you, so I'll get off my soapbox.
Not
here,
a controversial statement to me.
I don't think that's a controversial
no.
statement. I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb to say listen to medical
no.
people. But anyway, like again, the point of this is it's going to be different no matter what. It is going to be odd. It will be jarring for sure. And it will feel at times, and I don't use this word facetiously, it will be eerie to kind of see, let's even say there's capacity, to see 20,000 people at Neyland Stadium instead of 107,000 people. That is weird. It is strange. So just be ready for that. Let's still operate with the, I'm going to operate under the positive assumption that we will have some level of college football season until they tell me otherwise. I'm going to try to be positive, yet maybe not optimistic about it, but I'm preparing myself mentally for what it's going to sound and feel like, and look like, for some strange possibilities. And I would implore you to just prepare yourselves for it.
Adam Amin, thank you very, very much for your time, your insight, your expertise, your informed speculation once again on all things that have not, I don't think, been decided yet by the powers that be.
No, not at all. I haven't had conversations with my employers at Fox about this yet, because the broadcast networks, again, I'm giving you insight and some informed speculation just based off of experience. The broadcast networks are in a holding pattern. You know, I think you guys discussed it on your latest episode. You know, the broadcast networks are holding back. This is that they're at the mercy of the sport itself in a lot of aspects, including the playoff selections, which there's my one parting shot as well. Like, the networks are at the mercy of the game. And until the game decides, we have a plan, we know how we're going to do this, and we're going to make it happen. And here's the date it will happen. The networks themselves are in a holding pattern as well. So I end with that. So my apologies for that final ramble.
No worries. Once again, Adam Amin, who is new to Fox Sports, who is new to the Chicago Bulls, and hopeful at some point we're going to get some basketball with Adam Amin calling it and an improved Bulls team, because I am dearly married to a hardcore Chicago sports family. So that would be great, an improved Bulls team. I speak for myself only. And good luck with everything. Good luck with however it is that you're able to navigate everything personally and professionally.
I appreciate that, and I wish the same and hope the same for you and all of yours.
All righty, Dan, that is Adam Amin from Fox Sports. Good to hear his voice again. Glad to hear he's doing well. Really good info. He's our kind of guy.
Oh, he's the best. I love when we're able to hit upon something in a guest, in whoever, that you can tell that they could speak on the subject for 3 hours. They could give an extended TED Talk, and we've known Adam forever, and we just happen to know this about him, that he is so passionate about how broadcasts come together, that he was a perfect choice, and just knowing him as we do. So really cool to tap into that expertise, that informed speculation, as you know, networks still don't know fully what they're going to do, what their plan is. I thought it was fascinating, and I was the one who interviewed him. I thought it was fascinating listening, and I just wanted to keep listening. So thank you so much to Adam Amin of Fox Sports for coming on. Can't wait to see what happens, Ty. Cannot wait.
Fingers are crossed, right? Fingers are crossed. Thank you, Mr. Amin, for stopping by, for sharing some of your wisdom with us. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Spotify, Apple, Google, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find our show, The Solid Verbal. We're going to continue broadcasting rain or shine here. I don't know. We got all sorts of plans drawn up, so we're excited to keep rolling. At some point in the next couple of weeks, I think we start up with our season previews, right?
We do.
On the calendar. So we're ready. We're ready to go.
I'm excited.
Starting to already do some research and get ready for the 2020 season in whatever form it takes.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot here, Ty, but you were just telling me specifically about what you think Tennessee is going to do different along the offensive line from what they've done these last 3 years. So, I mean, the floor is yours to just sort of, you know,
I don't
want to
spoil it. You know, that's why people tune in. So we're going to wait a little bit until we get to the SEC East preview. But don't forget to follow us out there on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Going to work on that TikTok, aren't we?
Absolutely, we are. Come on.
Gotta work on that TikTok. I just grabbed the handle the other day. Work on it.
Have you watched through popular talks?
I've tried. Ticks? It's not bad. It is not bad.
That's what I've heard. I've seen the clips come across mostly Twitter. People will paste a tick that they enjoy. And I've laughed, Ty. I've laughed.
We will be back in your ears on Wednesday morning of next week. In the meantime, wish everybody a very happy weekend. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Hope you don't develop any kind of ominous cough, all right? And that goes for you too, Dan.
Yeah. Thank you. And you as well.
For that guy over there, all the way in sunny Southern California, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, over here in Eastern Pennsylvania. We will catch you all soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.